Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. We've been out a couple weeks. I was sick last week, but we're back with a new year and ready to go at it again. And given that it's really only middle of the month, so not too far into the new year, I'm sure everybody's sticking to their New Year's resolutions out there. If not, maybe it's already time to reevaluate those resolutions. I did talk about that a little bit a couple weeks ago, along with some thoughts on having New Year's retrospectives and not just resolutions to help determine whether or not you were successful with last year's resolutions and to make sure you succeed with this year's. And resolutions and goals are good to have, but I think even more important and more basic is to have an overall vision of why you've made the resolutions or goals that you did. And that vision needs to be based on reality. Maybe not an existing reality, but maybe a future reality. So much of the confusion in our culture today is because there is no reality to what people see, especially when you consider the so-called reality TV shows and the fact that people are entertained with movies. Not a lot of reality in those. There seems to be, and that seems to be where our culture lacks the wisdom of Solomon. Lots of people have goals, and maybe they have a vision, but if that vision isn't based on truth, it's kind of hard to achieve. And Solomon's very clear in Proverbs 28:18. He says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish, but he that keeps the law, happy is he." And so that's a vision based on the truth. I actually kind of like the Geneva Bible version where it says, where there's no vision, the people decay. And I think that's kind of what we see in society is a decay more than just the word perish being as descriptive. One of the great things about the book of Proverbs, though, is that it's divided up into 31 chapters. So you could actually make use of Solomon's wisdom, read a chapter every day of the month. And when you have those months with less than 31 days, you can always double up. And that could be your goal, to read one chapter a day. The vision might be stated more along the lines of, I'll restate this one, a proverb a day keeps the foolishness away, maybe instead of the apple a day keeping the doctor away. So you can use that wisdom of the chapter that you read each day as a guide to keep you from a foolish direction in your life. Goals are specific and quantifiable, and they usually have an endpoint. And once you achieve that goal, you're done. Goals tell us what we really need to do in order to get to a desired outcome. And maybe, like I said, you made a New Year's resolution or goal to reduce your weight, say, by 10%. And if your weight is, if I take the average FAA-defined person, because the FAA has to give the airlines an average-sized person so they can do their weight and balance. Average-sized male is 200 pounds. And let's say, like I said, you're going to lose about 10%, that'd be 20 pounds. So if you had a skiing accident and lost both your legs below the knee, you would just about achieve your goal for the year. But the problem is that probably really isn't what you envisioned when it came to losing weight. That's kind of the difference between just having a goal and the vision for what you want to do. And the same thing happens when it comes to money. There are lots of people with... And I'm sure there were lots of people with the goal of winning the Powerball, but how many winners really had a vision for that? Most winners have no vision, so they end up a lot worse off in the end. You just go read some of the stories that come out about those things. You know, the odds on that $1.5 billion grand prize was like 1 in 292 million. So the goal that they have of winning the lottery really isn't based on a reality, but it's that false hope that keep people buying and trying on that. Vision, on the other hand, is more broad, all-encompassing idea of how you want your life to look, feel, and be in the future. And if you can imagine it, then that's more of a vision. Unlike goals, it may be open-ended. There's never a specific moment when you might say, I achieved my vision. But it's an ideal you can continue to strive for, may get close to achieving, but you may never actually arrive at it. And sometimes the visions are harder to put into words than goals because you have to describe something, a world that really doesn't exist yet. And so putting it into words kind of gives you that ability to create that vision. And, you know, one example was Microsoft's vision statement at one point was a computer on every desk and in every home, all running Microsoft's software. So I think in some sense that vision, you could say, was achieved. It wasn't a big vision in terms of the wording, but it was big in terms of the overall results of it. So, and they could be short ones, but whatever it is, it's really, it describes how your life, how you expect your life to be. So you need to really have both, having goals and visions. It's not an either or consideration, but you really want to focus more on your vision than on your individual goals to begin with. And so I think the vision that Solomon was referring to, though, is the vision that we have to stay focused on the truth and the wisdom of God's word, because otherwise, like the Geneva translation says, the people decay. So let's not lose that vision that we have going forward into 2016. And when we come back after these commercial breaks, talk a little bit more about vision and what happens when you don't have one. We'll be right back with more of Solomon on Blast.
I've just closed my eyes again. Climbed aboard the Dreamweaver train. Trying to take away my worries of today and leave tomorrow behind.
All right, we're back with more Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. So Solomon says, where there is no vision, the people perish, or like I said, they decay. And I think that's really kind of where you have to start, Fred, is if there is no vision, what do people do?
Well, I would like to go back to the idea, before we even go there, is he's making a profound statement about the nature of human beings. That, and this is not just the religious worldview, it's just that he's saying that people are more than just animals. We don't just exist on what we eat and what we drink and where, you know, what we wear, even human things like that. But that people, before we're even that, we're a spiritual person on the inside that has to process, spiritually process life in order to live it correctly or successfully.
Right. And I think it's kind of the aspect of, do you go around, as they would say, staring at your belly button all the time, or do you actually
you have to
live,
see
beyond yourself,
beyond yourself, and you have to see even beyond your moment. You have to see beyond the end of your nose. You got to see beyond. You have to see down the road. You have to process all these other factors in life. You can't just grunt from one meal to the next and expect to have a meaningful existence as a person.
But I think even Solomon even addresses that. And he says in Proverbs 16:26, the person who labors, labors for himself, for his hungry mouth drives him on. So in that aspect, he's approaching it that if you're just laboring and laboring for yourself and you're focused on yourself, yeah, it's the base nature of you that's going to keep you moving forward, that hunger that you have to physically, but there's more to it than that.
Yeah, it's more to it than basic survival. And I think this is one of the reasons why we even define a survival mode. We have this phrase because we know that when people are functioning well and things are okay, that they're not in that mode. That's only a mode that you go into when you're desperate, just like all the different mechanisms in the body that go into play, you know, the flight or fight,
right,
you know, experience that people have to, you know, deal with from time to time. You know, that's not the normal way to live. The normal way to live, and this, I think, what Solomon is saying, is to have to process life spiritually. Without a vision, people perish, meaning you must approach your experience spiritually, or otherwise you're going to be bound by, you're going to be living in a survival mode, so to speak, all the time.
Yeah, and I think part of that confusion in our culture today is based on the fact that people have become very self-centered. I mean, the selfie is kind of the leading thing out there, right?
With
regards to people's lives. And it isn't reality when all you focus on is yourself. And because then you just get into a mode where you don't think there's any consequences for your individual actions because, hey, you're just doing it for yourself. No responsibility for those actions either.
Yeah, nothing says the arrow is pointed in the wrong direction like a selfie, like the selfie culture.
Right.
You know, we're talking about vision here and how important this is really to human development and to the great discoveries of the world. I know we both like a book called Wealth and Poverty by George Gilder. Yeah. So George Gilder tells the story of Sir Henry Bessemer, and he's the guy that created the Bessemer steel process. And so what's so amazing, and this is something that actually, it really captured my thoughts when he mentioned this, this idea here. Bessemer was working in his lab, and this was in 1854. He was an unknown person, and so He's finally, as he works through all the different formulas, it appears to him he finally found it. Now, he wrote in his diary, he said, "I could see in my mind's eye at a glance the great iron industry of the world crumbling away under the irresistible force of the facts so recently elicited." I love the way they used to talk in those days. And so what he's saying is, as he just came up with this formula in his lab, nothing had been actually done yet with it, he had this vision, and he saw that what he had just, discovered with these numbers was going to change the world when it came to producing steel, convert it from iron to steel. And it was the Bessemer process, of course, that opened the door to making skyscrapers.
Well, it opened everything. The door to railroads, the rail system that was developed in this country during that after that time frame. And that was probably one of the biggest consumers at that point in time in our country's history was the steel industry was making rails for the railroads.
Yeah, and we're talking about real science,
right,
that changed the world, that changed the way you produce a steel. We're not talking about a dreamer, you know, a dream weaver.
Right.
We're not talking about a guy just dreaming of winning the lottery. We're talking about a man who's fully and completely applied to his, you know, to his science, and he's got some hunches, but yet when it came down to it, it was the vision that prevailed. And that, to me, is an astonishing contrast, because we always put vision on the side of the dreamer, you know,
right,
somebody who's smoking too much weed and all they do is philosophize and hang out and do nothing but you know, dream of this and that. But this man was none of that. Yet, again, when it came down to it, it was the vision that pushed him over the edge.
And I think that's really what captures people's attention and gives them the desire to go forward, is that vision that comes from somebody that can produce that view of what the future looks like for them. If he can, he was able to direct that vision to people and say, look, with this process, we can eliminate the entire iron production industry, and here's why and how. People would be willing to embrace that, and people that did so made lots of money and expanded this country in a way that wouldn't have been able to occur without that process in place.
Right, and he saw it. I mean, he had a moment, a glimpse, where with somehow in the mind's eye, he actually saw what was going to happen. And 50 years later, turn of the century, you know, everything was exactly like he wrote in his diary, which is, to me, is a pretty astonishing story.
Right.
Now, the State of the Union address, of course, you know, Obama.
Was this past week, right?
Yeah, and he talked.
And that's kind of what triggered my thought process with going forward, was just looking at the 4 points that he put into his State of the Union address. And I thought, is this really a vision for our country?
And it was ironic that he referred to, you know, putting a man on the moon. Mm-hmm. When he's the guy that killed the NASA program. You know, it's a little bit of an irony there. You know, I never used to think too much about that stuff, to be honest with you. I remember as a child, the July day in 1969, when everyone was glued around the television.
And I do, too. I remember explicitly watching it. We were, I want to say, in like a clubhouse, and they had the TV up on the corner stand, and everybody was just waiting for that event to happen. It was a vision that that Kennedy had generated, and here it was,
yeah,
coming to fruition.
And when you think about that in context, of course, it didn't occur to me at the time, but you think about all the problems the United States had in the 1960s, all the you know, challenges that as a nation we were facing. There was something about keeping our eyes up.
Right.
And it turned out to be a bipartisan cause, because, you know, it started with Kennedy, and Nixon's administration is the one that saw it through, that there was something about having to look, as you put it, beyond your own belly button, that enabled somehow the country to rally at this very crucial time by looking up and looking out. And, you know, years later, you see the significance of something like that. And a lot of people, for example, getting back to killing the NASA program, basically, why don't we should just forget about that? And we should just address, you know,
yeah,
our
economic issues. We have a lot of problems on Earth. Why are we so worried about outer space?
Yeah, you know, this and that. But there's something about being human that demands us to continuously look out. And, you know, I think that in the long run, it might be a mistake. It might be a mistake to, you know, I like the way that Krauthammer put this. He said those that would want to divert or end NASA's budget to in favor of domestic spending would have undoubtedly objected to Magellan's costly plans too. You know, Ferdinand Magellan sailing around the world. I mean, there's something about having to push out that makes you view the world with a better perspective than
right.
simply focusing constantly on our own problems and issues. And you know, vision is so central to just being strong, being rounded, well-rounded.
And I looked at there were 4 points that they put on the White House website regarding his State of the Union address. And so the first one is, how do we give everyone a fair shot at opportunity and security in the new economy? How do we make technology work for us and not against us as we solve our biggest challenges? How do we keep America safe and lead the world without becoming its policeman? And how can we make our politics reflect the best in us and not the worst? So those were kind of the points that he was approaching. And from like he references Kennedy, but it's hard to find in there what is the real vision that he's trying to address versus, I think, in some respects, just looking at the problems that we have, right? The biggest challenge is fair shot, because why? Not everybody's got the same opportunity and security, supposedly. We don't want to be the world's policeman. That's a negative thing. Well, I think I'd rather the United States be the world's policeman than North Korea being the one that's running things from that aspect.
Or even Russia.
Or even Russia.
Putin, yeah. In the Middle East.
And so I just don't see the real vision that comes from the comments that, or at least the 4 points that he was talking about in his speech there. Not even close compared to what.
In other words, those things aren't really visions. Those are just you know, like you were pointing out, simple goals, and they might be legitimate goals in a certain sense, but a vision is transcendent. A vision is spiritual. I guess that's what we want to come back to here. It's more than just having a goal. It's a sense of purpose. It's a sense of you know, being made for something and finding what you've been made for, and at all costs somehow getting to that point. It's much more august than just having a go.
Right. And I think in one of the comments that Kennedy made in his speech, he said, if this capsule history of our progress teaches us anything, it's that man, in his quest for knowledge and progress, is determined and cannot be deterred. He says the exploration of space will go ahead whether we join in it or not. And it's one of the great adventures of all time, and no nation which expects to be the leader of other nations can expect to stay behind in this race for space. So he saw that, he saw that, you know, man's going to do what man does, which is make forward progress.
Yeah, and we could either contribute to the forward progress or try to hold it back, you know, which is the way a lot of power brokers try to approach these kinds of things. They try to use their influence and their political leverage to say, no one's moving forward because we don't want, this is not to our advantage.
Right.
But I think, you know, for a lot of that has come out about Kennedy since, and a lot of things, one thing I think he deserves credit for that, for
Absolutely.
That vision.
Yeah.
Because I think it really did play out in so many other ways than besides just having somebody walk on the moon.
Yeah. And there's a lot more in his speech that really comes through, but we're going to have to take a break, so we'll be back with more Solomon on Blast right after this. All right, we're back with more of Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. With our discussion of Solomon's comments that when there's no vision, the people perish, but happy is he that keeps the law. And I think the coming back here in looking at this, it's really the aspect of it is that people perish that is the bad part about the fact when there is no vision, that's what happens. And like I said, the Geneva translation actually says people decay.
Yeah, and there's the other newer translations like the NIV would say the people cast off all restraint.
Right.
So when someone doesn't view life that way, the bigger picture, then you have no reason to submit yourself to any kind of structure, discipline. What does it matter? Moral codes? They don't even matter after a while. Why? I mean, it's you're living in, you know, with no real direction or purpose, and so you just start drifting through life.
And I think to some extent that's what you're seeing with regards to the behaviors of these people that are going and joining ISIS. They have no restraint. But for whatever reason, they think there's a vision there of that group of leaders and that's what they should be doing.
Now, I think you're making a very interesting point here, and just about being young in general. young people crave some kind of structure.
A vision.
They do. They crave. You know, these people that think, well, I'm not going to try to influence my kids' a religion or point of view. When they're older, they'll discover it. That's completely inverted. Basically, it's the other way around. What kids need is a worldview. When they're young, they need someone to guide them in an effective and important and a legitimate worldview. And when that child is old enough, then they'll decide
right
what kind of variations they would like to make to that. But you give them a basis of how to think and how to approach the world. But what's happening today, there's no basis. Without vision, people cast off restraint. So without you handing off to the next generation the opportunity and the ability to see the world in a legitimate way, you're not leaving them open to discover anything. They're going to reinvent the wheel. They're going to be 30 years old before they start even beginning to process some of these serious thoughts. You know, and I don't just mean this trying to be cute. The truth is there's a whole generation of people, Doug, that the deepest things they've ever heard in life come from either Dr. Phil or Oprah. They haven't been trained to think seriously about life. And right. So you wonder why you're morally and emotionally drifting at a certain point in your life, because you need a vision or else you don't have anything, propelling you.
Right.
To move forward.
And I think you see that in terms of the whole aspect of kids that are still living at home when they're, like you say, 30 years old and they haven't figured out what they're going to do in their life. And the fact that one of the things that Obama referred to was, you know, how they've done such a great job with reforming healthcare in America. This is actually off of the White House website. It says reforming healthcare in America. After 100 years of talk and countless failed efforts, Barack Obama was the president who finally made healthcare reform a reality for America. And part of that was the fact that they extended the healthcare for, out to 26 years old before a company could drop somebody from their healthcare plan. And when you think about that, it's like, wait a minute. Why wouldn't somebody at 26 years old, that far along in their life, have already defined what they're doing, have a job, a goal, a vision for their life, and be actively pursuing it, that they would need to be still living under their parents' healthcare system at that point in time.
Right. You're assuming they're going to be drifting at 26 years old.
Yeah, that seems to be what the assumption was, is that, wait, we know you're not going to be able to take care of yourself at 26 or up through 26 years old, so we'll force companies to keep you on your parents' medical plan in order to do so. And so it's that entitlement mindset that you don't have to worry about having a vision for yourself to go put yourself in a position where you can pay for your own health care.
And then you start talking about some of the other aspects of not having visions of how we decay as a culture, you know? What do they say, 25% now? I mean, this number's been out there a while. 25% of Americans are on prescription medication of some type or another. I mean, 25%. I have no problem with modern medicine and what it can do to help people through whatever medical challenges they're facing. But really, you think one out of every four people has to be on a drug? I don't believe that. I don't believe that is legitimate. I think you're just talking about superpower. Industry here.
It reflects the fact that there is a
drug industry is a superpower in its own right. And they're convincing everyone they've got to be on something to get over whatever. And, you know, it's you talk about a culture adrift without a vision. People cast off restraints. All the other health implications of taking a drug. People that are on all these, they stack drugs now, of course. Some people, they have no choice. They've got these serious heart procedures and whatnot. But there's just a lot of fallout to being on medication is what I'm trying to say. And so when you have a vision for your health, you're like, I don't want to be on a drug stack.
Absolutely.
You know, if I don't have to be, or I don't want to take this or take that. If you have a vision, what I'm saying, for what you think you need to be and where you want to go. I mean, I think you'd regulate a lot of that in your own right. Like, I'll think about that, or I'll study that, or I'll get a second opinion, or even a third opinion.
And you see that just in terms of the aspect, from the aspect of diabetes. It isn't a disease. It's really a diet issue when it comes to a lot of people, that it's what they eat and
there are some that are definitely and they're predisposed,
you know? Right, but a lot of people, they find out that they can just change their diet and then they eliminate the diabetes in their life. So that aspect of it is, if you don't have a vision that I want to stay healthy, then you will end up decaying because of the bad input that you're taking in, just like bad spiritual input, bad food, both of them work the same way. You're going to end up decaying one way, or from both of them, one way or another.
Now, here's another idea for vision. The abstinence movement of a few years ago, you don't hear a lot about it now.
Oh, right.
I think Bristol Palin kind of killed it a few years back. And I remember saying this, and I think I wish I could have given her my advice when she went on her abstinence tour before the second baby. I said that she should include public speaking in that pledge, and that would probably save her a lot of embarrassment.
Right.
But, you know, but that's just really about vision, right?
Right.
You just have a vision for your life that one day, you know, you're not going to be 18 or 19. You're going to have to work through marriage issues, intimacy issues. You're going to have to raise your children with a certain level a standard yourself. You don't want them to be out there partying their brains out. So it's all about vision. That's all that really is about. It's having a vision for the future, that you're not going to be that age forever, and that you're going to move on in life, and you're going to have to represent yourself with some dignity at certain phase, other phases of your life. That's all, instead of this big, they turned it into something else, repression and all that stuff.
And I think that's part of the young people, is that you don't know exactly where you're going. And if the education system gives you that, well, if it feels good, do it kind of definition of your life, and anything goes, then you do have that problem where you end up with a lot of people, a lot of these young girls with children, but no husbands, because that wasn't in the plan. It was just me in the moment at this point in time now. And it's more along the lines of the living in present day versus looking at things from a future orientation. It's having a present orientation rather than a future orientation for your life.
Yeah, the point is, and that Solomon is saying, when you don't have a sense of where you're going, you drift and you decay and you collapse, and suddenly every obstacle and temptation seems to be Mount Everest, and you just can't get through it.
And that's where you end up falling back to, okay, if I need some, the doctors will prescribe the right solution to the problem with the drug issue part.
You start looking for other people with strong souls to pull you through your morass.
Right. And a couple of the other things that came out of the State of the Union address that they were touting, at least off of the White House website, was they say increasing the minimum wage. You know, that the president had called on Congress to raise the national minimum wage, and he led a national push for an increased minimum wage, supporting that increase in 17 states and D.C., which will increase wages for around 7 million workers as of 2017. Well, my thought there was, again, there's no consequence, no responsibility to work harder to increase your wage, to be more of a benefit to that company that you're working for, in order that they pay you more because they're going to get more work out of you and a better return on their money. It's, you don't have to have that, right?
Well,
the vision isn't that you work and the company succeeds. It's in the moment, you need to have more, and we'll force people to pay you more. Whether or not you actually do more work or not doesn't doesn't really apply.
Yeah, no, there's a very important thought you're touching on here when it comes to what vision really is. Vision isn't just a collective vision. It's an individual. It's made up of both. The collective vision is that individuals would have vision, and that this is this is American democracy. Personal responsibility is fundamental to American democracy. The power, the empowered individual. And that's the American vision, the empowered individual. And that when individuals will be responsible and move forward and do their best and strive for excellence, that we as a group, society as a whole, will benefit from that. And so just having government vision without
an individual
assuming,
right,
individual vision is a dangerous thing, because then you begin to say, oh, well, it doesn't really matter what we do as individuals. You go ahead and just smoke your weed.
Yeah.
And the important people, the smart people, will take care of everything and we'll string you along. And that's a dangerous kind of vision.
Yeah. And Solomon kind of points that out when he says, all the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes. So you see that viewpoint that, hey, if I'm just looking at myself and I'm thinking for myself, then, and I'm not having a vision that goes beyond me and myself, I think everything's correct because that's my view of the world.
In fact, that kind of thinking will kill democracy.
Absolutely.
Because then, as they say, the majority will rule by tyranny. In other words, the majority, when they think like that, won't care about the public good anymore. They'll only care about their personal, satisfaction. And as they say, one of the great dangers is the majority, when they're getting too many benefits, will vote themselves a raise every time, right? Just right. Like Congress.
Absolutely. They vote
That's what they do.
Absolutely.
So why should the American electric be any different, you know?
Yeah.
So you're going to vote for candidates that make the biggest promises, and who's going to benefit me? And then, you know, the whole thing collapses with that kind of individuals have to see themselves as being way more important to the process than just simply receiving something from it.
Right. And have that vision that, yeah, there are going to be difficulties in that process to achieve that vision. But if you have, as an individual, the courage and the foresight to say, well, I'll work through those problems. Now, if the space program had quit when the rocket blew up on the launch pad, where would we have gone, right? From a space program at that point.
Yeah, right.
We would, if we'd just quit at that point in time. But the vision, the overall vision, was still there, that we needed to put a man on the moon, and in spite of those difficulties, we were going to continue to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that it's the vision that propelled us through all the setbacks. And I think that's a perfect analogy just for everyone's vision, right?
Right.
When you get a vision, everyone's going to have setbacks. Everyone will have obstacles. You're going to have people that resist you, people that tell you you're crazy. But the vision is what keeps you on track. And without the vision, Solomon says,
people
will cast off restraint and say, what's the use, man?
Right.
What was the... the famous line, what is it? The light up, tune out.
Drop out?
Yeah, drop out. Timothy Leary's line. I can't think of it offhand, but basically that's what people do, whether they're using LSD or not. They take a form of that philosophy into life sometimes.
All right, we'll be back after this break with more of Solomon on Blast.
Just wanted to thank you guys for listening to us here at Power Talk 1210. We really appreciate it. So, thanks.
Does it seem like your car is driving you around in circles? It probably is if you've been driving Tucson City streets and your car is out of alignment. If it is, then it's costing you money. Your tires wear out faster and you're spending more on gas. So what should you do? If you're wise, you call Mike Vance at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276. Mike's been in business in Tucson for over 25 years and has the experience to diagnose and fix that alignment problem right the first time. As the name says, though, he doesn't just do alignments. If you've got brake or suspension problems, or for that matter, just about any car problem, Mike has the expertise to fix it. As a longtime customer of Mike's, I assure you, he'll treat you with integrity and get you back on the road without running you around in circles. So give Mike a call at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276, and tell him Doug from Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210 sent you. It's the wisest thing you can do for all your car repair needs. Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276.
Do you struggle to take control of your cholesterol levels? If so, you have a higher cardiovascular risk of heart attack or stroke. Take control of your risk with the help of Tucson's trusted certified lipid specialist, Nicole Safone, and her team at Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology. Through a basic heart-healthy lifestyle and advanced therapies, you can start taking back control of your cardiovascular risk of heart attack or stroke. To schedule your advanced cholesterol screening and personal cardiovascular risk reduction plan, call Tucson's trusted certified lipid specialist, Nicole Safone, at Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology at 520-323-7277. Or ask your doctor for a referral to Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology, 520-323-7277. To learn more about cardiovascular risk reduction, be sure and visit us online at azlipidcenter.com. Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology, serving Tucson, Nogales, and Yuma. Call us today at 520-323-7277.
Why not give us a call now and join in the discussion? 750-7456. We want to hear what you have to say.
Hello?
Power Talk 1210.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry. Be happy. In every life we have some trouble. When you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry. Be
happy. All right, we're back with more Solomon on Blast. Like Bob Marley says, don't worry, be happy. Well, Solomon takes it a little bit different. He says that for those people where they don't have a vision and they decay, there is a solution to it. His solution is, happy is he that keeps the law. And I think that's really the answer to those situations where there is no vision and the people are decaying. You can change that by having a set of standards that you place around your life. And that's really what he's talking about. Have a vision, and have a vision based on standards that are true and will achieve something, not standards based on things that won't achieve things. I have to always go back to communism, socialism. Yeah, they had a vision, but it wasn't based on the truth, so it didn't succeed. Whereas a more capitalistic society is based along the aspect of truth, and if you follow that, you can achieve what we as a country have been able to.
Yeah, and let me put it in another sense. He's basically saying a vision is channeling your ability to see, channeling it through some proper boundaries, you know. And he says he's talking about the law, and he's referring to the Torah, you know, in Hebrew. I think it would be the word that he would use. But he was saying this is our worldview, and you channel your vision through this, and it's going to take you further. Kind of like the way you would use a laser, channeling light. It's right. Going to take you further than if you just disperse your thoughts in every direction. That you have to have boundaries. And those boundaries, people view boundaries wrongly. You know, it's almost counterintuitive. You think boundaries restrict.
Right.
But in reality, if you have good boundaries, they actually propel you into the future.
Right.
If they're good.
You just have to look at the highway system.
You have to see it. Right? You have to see through it. He says, don't allow yourself to see down this channel, and you'll see you'll actually go further than if you just do whatever you want any day you feel like doing what you want, letting it all hang out, you know?
All right. We've got a caller. Joe is on the line. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to Solomon on Blast.
Oh, hey, fellas. Thanks so much for the time. You know, I just want to point something out. And I think now the problem is to be able to detect where capitalism is happening and where it isn't. Because where it isn't is much greater than where it is. And I say that because of the macro money and the just the weird behavior that goes on. And part of capitalism, when you invest in something, you should be able to look at what it is. And so many aspects of what we now define as capitalism, you know, there is so much socialism going on in the at the top. The way money is infused into this economy is pure socialism. It's classism. It's not, hey, I'm seeking a loan. Really? Okay, well, come to me. I can get you a loan. You know, everything goes right back to the Fed, right back to all this stuff that isn't capitalism. But now, you know, so when we have this discussion, socialism versus this and that, it's the reason why we're at today, where we're at. Trump is popular. He's the closest thing in this happening. But at the end of the day, 22%, and this is a Gallup poll, and I love this, 22% of Republicans in a big Gallup poll said that they would be willing to try socialism. My challenge to them is learn how to identify what capitalism is, try and live within the means, because we are not practicing right now. We're not even coming close to getting it done. So I think it's the boogeyman, you know, and to talk in broad generalities when, you know, this thing is just huge socialism for the rich, capitalism for you and me.
And I don't disagree with you there, Joe. And actually, I have some material that if you keep listening in the future, I've got some stuff that I'm sure you'll, you know, will align with what you're saying. And I agree. The key that we're trying to focus on here is, at least with respect to the second part of this, is there has to be boundaries. And I think what you're talking about falls into that, that there are no boundaries when it comes to the financial environment that we're dealing with in this world today. It used to be that there were limits on the budget, that you spent only what you had, not what you could create out of thin air. And it leads to the kind of situation that we're talking about. So I really appreciate that, Joe. And
thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Guys, first of all, it's Jake Feinberg.
Good morning, Jake.
On Solomon on Blast.
Good morning, Jake.
Yo, good morning. Happy New Year to both of you guys.
Thanks.
I missed you the last couple of weeks. I think it's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
It's so good to see both your faces. But, you know, just a question for both of you quickly. He was talking about spending beyond your means or having this sort of fantasy system where the middle part of what I heard, you know, what I understand is that a lot of Trump supporters are middle class people that feel really angry that they were sold a bill of goods about an idea that you could ascend in the middle class, that you could ascend materially. And now they're on the back end of it. How much do you hold big corporations responsible for dangling all this materialism out there that people can't even afford? And yet they're doing, listen, during the Bush years, you started having the housing bubble, people at 7-Eleven, good workers, getting approved for $300,000 loans. That's the capitalistic system. That's reckless. Okay, I want your thoughts on that.
Well, again, I think it goes along with what Joe was talking about. And it's putting in the boundaries in place that ensure that you aren't going outside of your ability to...
What's one boundary? Tell me one boundary.
One boundary, obviously, spend less than you make. That's like the easiest one. There's an old Saturday Night Live skit where the guy comes in and says, okay, I'm going to show you how to do finances. And the guy says, okay, you're going to spend less than you make. Wow. Could you explain that again? Yeah, just spend less than you make. It's a great clip. So I think that's the one boundary. But from a more Solomon point of view, he's saying that, you know, you have a set of commands. The law is there. The spiritual aspect of what we're trying to look at here is what's going to put boundaries on you. So as an individual, I can't say I'm going to blame the Congress. I'm not going to blame big corporations. I'm going to blame individuals' view of what they can and can't do in their own lives. So when they're willing to go beyond their means, that's an individual's choice. That's not a big corporation or anybody.
Yeah, something I want to just kind of point out here, just getting rounding out the discussion here about King Solomon. He wasn't challenging people to a disciplined boundary life based on the fact that he was some kind of,
dictator.
Cleric, monarch, dictator. King Solomon lived the life of a rock star at one point.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we're reading, looking at, is some of his writings in the book of Ecclesiastes. He's actually coming back to a position, you know. And he says in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, he said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. This is his discussion.
Right.
And he says, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all.
Right.
And, so, you know, he's basically
we're done.
Speaking from that point.
Got to cut you off, Fred. Okay. We only got a couple seconds, but that is the end. There's got to be control in our own lives. Think wisely till next week.